Welcome back to our final segment of the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Doug Webster, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Labor. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Dennis Kayser. Doug, I talked to many of my guests about the topic of collaboration, and you, in fact, you mentioned that earlier. So what kinds of partnerships are you developing now to improve operations and outcomes at labor, and how may these partnerships perhaps change over time?
First off, we're partnering with the various agencies when it comes to A123 and internal controls. I think for some agencies at least, and certainly not so much at the Department of Labor, A123 is sometimes viewed as a CFO document. My predecessor and the secretary have done an outstanding job in setting the message that responsibility for internal controls is a management responsibility, which by definition applies to all agencies. What that means is there's a duty on us to really collaborate with those agencies and making sure they have the tools and the understanding and so on. So I think that's been a successful example of collaboration. Another is with the Office of the Chief Information Officer. We work very closely with the OCIO to develop the IT systems that will protect the financial data. They have responsibility for the non-financial systems. We have responsibility for the financial systems, but we certainly can't do that by ourselves. So I think that's an example of a good collaborative kind of a relationship. And then finally, I've got a collaborative relationship with the various agencies relative to CAM, our Managerial Cost Accounting System. While previously we've been more in the role of developing the system and providing the data to them, as I noted before, we are increasingly moving to being a tool facilitator rather than having accountability for the system, because accountability ultimately needs to transition to actual use of the data. That's a very collaborative effort as we make that transition. I think also a great deal of discussion around town, that at least in meetings that I've been to, has recently been on collaboration, partly around addressing preparedness for the upcoming transition between administrations. However, meeting organizational challenges and addressing enterprise risks increasingly requires crossing organizational boundaries. So collaboration by definition becomes part of the requirement for success in these cases. Otherwise, we're likely to be doomed to failure, or at least a more arduous and costly implementation approach if we try and take this stovepipe by stovepipe.
So Doug, sort of continuing this line of thought into the future, can you give us a sense of what some of the key issues that will be faced and affect CFOs government-wide over the next few years?
Sure. I think the new administration's views on financial initiatives may be different. I mean, I have not personally heard a lot said at this point in the campaign between the two parties of what their thinking is in terms of management agenda in general, much less financial management. So those are clearly going to have to come into better focus before we can be more specific. What I would hope we don't do is begin to change simply for the sake of change. Certainly, whoever wins the elections in November will probably want to have their management agenda. I'm certainly hopeful that whatever that may be, that we don't just toss out what I think has been a major improvement in accountability for results under this past administration, but instead build upon that. I believe we do need to keep in mind going forward the concepts of transparency and accountability. They remain just as important as they have in the past. But again, I hope we maintain this balance of not trying to spend $2 to go after $1, because a transparency and accountability have to be balanced against results. And what I mean by that is you can spend every dollar that we spend on more and more detailed distribution of data in terms of spending and so on is a dollar that we're taking away from executing some program. So it's not that it's not important. It's that they come out ultimately from the same set of taxes. We need to figure out what that appropriate balance is. And I'm fearful that sometimes, more in the realm of Congress, because they're responding to what's popular out in the public, you don't see, for example, headlines about so much effectiveness of programs. I don't know who's reading the performance and accountability reports of agencies around town. What you do see in the headlines is the occasional GAO report that talks about some abuses in some agency regarding purchase cards or premium class travel or so on. Those are important, but there's a limit to how important those come relative to actually executing the mission of the agencies.
So transparency really has to extend itself into understanding what those costs are and where that balance may lie.
Exactly.
Right.
Doug, we've talked a little bit about the a new administration and change that would come with that. Earlier you mentioned some topics about an aging workforce. It becomes clear that agencies need to have effective strategies for organizing and retaining its intellectual resources and its institutional knowledge. To that end, can you elaborate on your efforts to implement effective knowledge management efforts within the Office of the CFO at Labor?
Sure. I think basically it gets down to getting the right information to the right people at the right time. Now, that's almost an old cliche. But I think in our area, I could probably point to three areas. First, I would, again, refer back to CAM. I think it's identifying and disseminating a good, relevant cost information for appropriate decision-making, because ultimately where the costs incurred in the agency are not in the office of the CFO, which is relatively small in comparison, but it's the decisions that drive costs are being made out in the agencies. So our role is one of providing good data to support that decision-making. Secondly, an example I could bring up would be eGov Travel. We have partnered with the GSA to be a lead agency in terms of getting the travel process implemented with the proper technology tools, IT tools, to facilitate the booking process, the travel arrangement process, the voucher process, and so on a very automated fashion. We're using less manpower and reservations and payment of vouchers. But I think there's an element of knowledge management in that as we work through and taking information that was previously had access to but executed in a very manually intensive process. And finally, I'd offer up as an example of the Nucor financial management system. We are going to be able to generate additional detailed data that's going to really facilitate decision-making relative to the accounting processes and disseminate that information much more quickly and do all of that with much less manpower.
So we've talked about a variety of things here, Doug. So at a very macro and broad level, what are some of the major opportunities and challenges that your organization is going to encounter in the future? And how do you envision that your office, the Office of the CFO within Labor, may need to evolve over the next couple of years?
Well, I think one thing is the role of CFO is going to change as issues of the Department of Labor, of course, change. And one thing that I made a brief reference to earlier is the shrinking discretionary portion of the budget. Anyone that knows the name David Walker, the former comptroller of the General Accountability Office, may be familiar with the horror story that he's painted if we don't do some significant changes in terms of Medicare, Medicaid, retirement, and so on. It's the proverbial third rail of politics that people don't want to touch, or those in Congress, and I can understand that. But if that doesn't change, the consequences are a drastically shrinking budget. For the audience benefits, when we talk about discretionary budget, we're not talking about things that we necessarily are discretionary in terms of discretionary spending at home. What we're talking about is things like national defense. You know, it's things that aren't guaranteed payments like Medicare and Medicaid. So a discretionary doesn't translate into necessarily optional. I think that that's something we're going to have to deal with, the CFO is going to have to take a more risk-based approach and be a facilitator in this discussion across the agency. I also believe that the impact will need be for a broadening of A123. Right now, A123 that we talked about before, internal controls, is focused on operations, efficiency and effectiveness, regulatory compliance, and financial reporting. We're going to need to broaden that out more to that enterprise risk management approach that I mentioned previously. I think there's also that challenge of increasing public scrutiny that I've talked about a couple times. It's important, but we cannot allow that to become our overall driving factor, because it's important to keep the public informed, but we also have to balance that with getting the mission done. And impact will be more resources spent on tracking and reporting dollars if we don't, and less available for meeting the needs of the public. Finally, seniority of the workforce. At Labor, at least, we've fortunately seen a little bit less number of folks leaving the government than had been originally projected. But nevertheless, that number that are eligible to be retiring in the next 5 years is a little bit scary in terms of its size. And we need to be prepared to deal with that. So we're going to have to continue to be aggressive in our recruiting processes and our retention processes.
Right. So given your extensive federal service, both as a civilian and within the military, what advice might you give a person who's out there considering a career in public service, perhaps in the federal government?
Well, I'd say probably most generally that one's compensation is more than the paycheck you bring home. And I think that the federal government, for most cases, and there are some exceptions depending on the career field, pays very competitively. But that having been said, I think there are a lot of benefits that the federal government potentially has in terms of intrinsic compensation that is more difficult to provide in the private sector. Private sector, as you know, and I know having spent time there, ultimately it's driven by the bottom line of profit. And so the private sector rewards folks in various ways. One of the advantages that government has is it doesn't have the bottom line of a profit. What it does have is a mission. And to the degree that folks can identify with that mission and believe that it being a part of executing that mission means that they're providing a service back to their fellow citizens, I think that can be a very rewarding element of, frankly, overall compensation that's difficult to match in the private sector. So I would say that for those folks who that would have value, I think that a career in public service should be considered as a potential calling.
That's a wonderful perspective. So compensation is more than money. That certainly makes sense. Doug, unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time. I want to thank you for spending this hour with us. But more importantly, Dennis and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to our country, both in your military and now in your government executive career.
Well, Alan, Dennis, thank you both for the opportunity to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to share some thoughts. And I'd also like to say, and I probably need to say this less than many CFOs in town, because it may be more obvious that I've only been here a short time. But I've got to say, you know, any little amount that I've personally been able to contribute is only because of the team that I've got. I think that Sam Mock, my predecessors, laid some excellent groundwork, and I am truly indebted to the quality of the folks that I've got, because there's no one that in a leadership position that can ever lay personal claim to anything that they achieved other than through the results of the team. And we've got a great team at Department of Labor, as I think our consistent track record has shown for many years.
That's great. Thank you very much. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Doug Webster, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Labor. My co-host has been Dennis Kayser, partner in IBM's Federal Civilian Practice. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who may not be able to hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.